Team Toyota is leading the way with their new and pre-owned Toyotas right now. Their process is fast, easy, and it puts you in control the whole way. Just check out the reviews online. With locations in Langhorne, Glen Mills, and Princeton, visit teamtoyota.net and be safe, be strong, be a team.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Phillies Talk Podcast. I am Jim Salisbury. We're coming to you on Friday, June 18th. The Phillies are in California, in San Francisco, getting ready to open up a three-game series on Friday night with Gabe Kapler's San Francisco Giants, tied for the best record in baseball. Phillies are at 500. Coinciding with this trip to California, globally in baseball is a rather significant controversy, a big controversy. The game has really skewed toward pitching, offense is down, and the powers that be believe that a big reason is that pitchers are applying sticky substances to baseballs, foreign substances. That's increasing the tack on the ball, some of the rotation, the backspin, and ultimately the velocity. The spin rate we hear a lot about, and Major League Baseball issued a crackdown on this actually in spring training. They're going to start enforcing it on Monday. And I just thought this would be a great time to bring on my go-to expert for years when it comes to pitching. And that is Larry Anderson, former Phillies pitcher, current radio broadcaster with the team. Larry, I was just looking this up. And thank you for being with me. I was just looking this up. You pitched in 699 big league games, 995 in the third innings. My first year covering the Phillies was 94. And I remember you had a scope on your knee and missed some time. If you don't have that knee scope, you're over 700 games and over 1,000 big league innings.
Yeah, I was actually hoping to get that 700 and 1,000, but it's close enough, as Harry would say.
Close enough, certainly. I mean, that's a hell of an accomplishment. That's a hell of a career. And then in your lifetime career, including minor leagues, well over 1,000 games, 1,098 games, and 2,200 over almost 2,300 innings. Man, that's a lot of work on that elbow and that shoulder.
But a lot of people, I don't think realize in the minor leagues I was a starter, had a significant number of complete games, and. I think it was over 1,200 innings in the minor leagues. So, I mean, it was 9.5 years total in the minor leagues, you know, back and forth, not all consecutive, but a lot of minor league time. And I appreciate that because I learned a whole hell of a lot more about baseball by spending 9.5 years in the minor leagues.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
And you tell me all the time that, nowadays there's so many coaches and instructors and voices in your ear. And I remember you telling me a number of times when you were in the minor leagues, they didn't have a full-time pitching coach at a lot of the teams. You had maybe a rover who'd come in every 3 weeks. And in between, you had to get in the bullpen, figure stuff out for yourself, pick the brains of your teammates, And ultimately, you think that actually helped you more?
I don't think there's any question about it. I learned myself. You learn instincts, or you hone your instincts, I think. But I had some good young pitchers, not young, my age, coming up with me that I could lean on and I could go to. One of them was Dennis Eckersley, coming up through the minor leagues together. And this kid was, it was unbelievable. From the time he signed, he was dominating. And, I could go to him, you work on stuff, you try stuff, you ask him other questions. How do you do this? What do you, how do you hold your slide or whatever it is? You had to figure things out on your own. And that's why I think those days back then lend themselves to players having instincts when they get to the big leagues, knowing what to do, knowing how to play, knowing the right base to throw to, all everything about it. You had to figure out. And nowadays it's, they had the laser pointers at Dodger Stadium telling the outfielders where to stand. Like, they got cheat sheets now. They can't remember from one inning to the next which sign they're going to use with the man on second. They're making this about as easy as you can on a player. But at the same time, they're turning them into robots, complete robots, because they don't have to think. I can't tell you how many times I see players go to the back to the bench when they're on deck. They can't make a pitching change. A guy that's been in the league for 10 years, they got to go back and look at video. Like, the guy's been in the league for 10 years. You probably faced him 20 times. You have no idea what he's going to do. Come on.
And you can also do that before the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how can you not, why do you have to go to a video to see what a guy's doing or see how a guy's throwing when you know exactly what he throws or should know and should know exactly how he's pitched you? You should have an idea of that. And it baffles me, but we've become so reliant on the coaches and everybody telling us what to do every second of every game, of every inning, that you can't learn. It's tough to learn anything. It really is.
You are describing to me an over-engineered athlete, over-engineered athlete with, too much coming at you from not even coaches, from technicians. I would call them technicians. And,
Is that what you call them?
They're technicians. And I think there's a difference between technicians and coaching. I really do.
I have other words for them.
I just think, you're dealing with great athletes. There were great athletes in the major leagues before you played, when you played. There are great athletes now. At some point, kind of trust the stuff that got you there, that made you good all along, and go out and do it. And, they describe baseball as a thinking game. I think it's more of a reaction game. And when you're over-engineered and doing too much thinking, you're not reacting.
Right. And, a lot of it is the preparation, but part of that preparation is before each pitch. Who's on base? Where are the outfielders? Where are my other infielders? Who's at the plate? How fast is he? I mean, those are all things that you should have an idea on. And if you're young, you're a rookie, I can understand maybe grabbing a sheet and trying to figure out who this guy is. You don't really know if he runs that well or not, things like that. But overall, it can't be a thinking man's game anymore, because they're not allowing players to think. From the time they sign, they're not allowed to think on their own, put it that way.
You watch the college game and they're calling all the pitches from the bench.
Oh, yeah. Which I guess, I don't know if they have a center field camera in the dugout they can look at, but I'm pretty sure I couldn't stand in a dugout and tell a pitcher what to throw, because I don't know where his other pitches have gone, because the only thing I can tell from the side is high or low. That's it. What else can you see from the side, from the dugout? You can't tell if it's on the outside corner, in the middle of the plate, or inside corner. All you know is vertical, up and down. So, and it's becoming that way. Players get to rookie ball. Now they all have, a pitching coach, a pitching coordinator, a manager, a hitting coach, an infield coach, an outfield coach. It's like, when do these guys learn anything on their own? And, the other thing is guys rushed up through the minor leagues. They get to the big leagues and it's almost like some of them don't even know how to play. It's surprising.
And, you know, and they also have a mental skills coach. I remember the 92-3-4 Phillies. They had a mental skills coach. His name was Johnny Padres. He used to build confidence with the best of them, right?
Yes. He would make you feel every time you're on the mound or he's talking to you, you're warming up, whatever it is, he would make you feel like you're Cy Young, like you've already won the Cy Young or you've already won three of them. He had a way of coming out there and talking to you and making you believe that you belonged out there, that you're the best that's ever been out there, and that you're not going to have any problem getting this next guy out or getting through this inning or whatever it may be. He was the ultimate in confidence building up of any pitcher.
Yeah. And before this turns into a total gripe fest, getting back to these robotic players and not thinking for themselves and not knowing just sort of the basics. You know, Joe Girardi in spring training stressed, I mean, they were not a good defensive team last year, but he stressed in spring training, you know, we want to be, you know, be ready for every pitch. Know what you're going to do if the ball comes to you before every play. You know, think ahead. I mean, that's stuff you learn in Little League. That's stuff you learn in middle school. Have a plan. Know what you're going to do the ball. Know the situation. And to hear that had to be stressed in spring training in a big league camp really just kind of blew me away. If
it
not,
is.
Maybe grow up.
Yeah, I mean, why it's gotten to the point where the major leagues is part of your player development. That's what I always thought the minor leagues were, was player development, trying to develop players, teach players, give them lessons on how the game's played. Baseball 101, starting from the basics. I remember talking to Dallas Green probably at least 10 years ago and up until the time he passed, till his last day in the Phillies press room or front office, talking with him in the hallway of the press room about why don't we start with rookie ball when players sign and they go to Florida or Sarasota, wherever they're going, I mean Clearwater, why don't we have a class two or three nights a week or one night, whatever, something, but sit down and have a class of teaching baseball, teaching players about moving runners, about bunting, about pitching in situations, whatever it is. At least that way, you know, that there's been a class that it's been taught. I look at players that get to the big leagues today, I'm amazed at some of their lack of knowledge of the game and what you should and shouldn't do, you know, taking an extra base, when not to try and stretch a single into a double, stuff like that. When you watch so many games with full of what I think are mental mistakes, it begs the question, are we teaching these guys the right way, or are we teaching them at all?
And some of it even goes back, I think a lot of it goes back to before they even get in pro ball. I mean, you know, when we grew up, you wanted to play for your high school team and your local American Legion team. Now these kids are so saturated in the travel ball.
Yes.
And the travel ball is basically a 9 month showcase so you can get a college scholarship, and you pay big, big money for it. And when you're on that travel ball team, you're not playing for your high school. You're playing for your town and all that pride. You're playing to, like, people notice you and notice your skills and your tools. And when you're paying that big money, you know, dad, you know, he doesn't want you to move that runner. I want my kid to drive the ball so the scout can see it, so they can get a college scholarship. I don't, you know, necessarily want him to move a runner or a bunt. Heaven forbid. It's about showcasing the skill and not necessarily, you know, winning that game. Because I don't know, on a travel team, everybody's coming from 40 and 50 miles away. Do you win a championship, or do you have a 30-year reunion after you won a championship? Does it mean anything? I don't think so. And I think that is really missing. That team element is missing just because of the nature of the beast and the evolution of travel ball and what it's there for. It's there to showcase your skills and get you a scholarship or maybe get you recognized in pro ball.
Yeah, there's no question about that. If I had this conversation a few days ago with somebody about the travel ball and how they felt like it's hurting players.
Team concept disappears, I think.
I think there is a team concept when you're in travel ball. It's like you said, what do you play for? I don't know, is there a World Series or travel ball World Series you go to? I mean, what, I don't know what the end goal is other than trying to put up the best numbers you can so somebody notices you. It's, you know, it should be, let's put up numbers so we can win. Let's just win. And I think also, you know, travel ball is a place where parents can get more involved where they shouldn't be. It's, my son should be here. My son should be playing. I hear this all the time. I'm like, stop.
It's because they're paying. And I guess they feel literally more invested. But, you know, I always think about that. I think about the teams I played on in high school, and you bump into kids around town and you have that little reunion. And if you're fortunate enough to win a title, and that's not always something special in your mind. And I don't know that you ever remember the tournament you won in, King of Prussia or something, you know, back in the day. It's just another weekend tournament that you pay for. So
one other thing too, Steak, I think that when we were talking about instincts, the instincts, I think, of players, I think they're not ingrained at a young age like I thought they were with me. I was playing wiffle ball with, you know, my neighbors who were 2 and 3 years older than me, playing out in the field behind our houses. We spent all the time, you know, if it was baseball season, we played baseball, basketball, football. We didn't stay on one sport year round, which I think rounded us more as athletes. And you don't get so saturated or so stuck on just one sport, but the other thing, we were always out there, but today, how many more guys are inside playing video baseball instead of being out in the sandlot? And I don't think you gain instincts by playing video baseball. And I think there's a lot more of that nowadays, the video games, than there are actual being out in the field playing all the time. And it's, I mean, for me, it was like every waking minute I was out with my buddies and we bicycled to a park. We would play, we would set up games, did it all the time. We were always playing. And today I don't see the same thing. I don't say it's a commitment. I think it was more of a love of wanting to be out there all the time.
I something I saw my entire youth and I never see today is a baseball glove hanging on the handlebars of a bicycle. And that was where we stored our gloves. And then we went off and found our game. And the world has changed. Nowadays, if there's not a nicely manicured field with lines and an umpire and a coach, and of course, a beautiful uniform and oranges after the fourth inning, kids aren't playing. So everything and a trophy and a banquet at the end of the year. So it's become different. It worries me a little bit about the future. But that said, I don't want to be accused of being a get off my lawn. I love the game. And I think it's a beautiful game and a great game. There are concerns. And, on this podcast, Larry, I'm well known for going off on tangents. And we just went off on about a 15-minute tangent. Let's talk about this issue with the sticky stuff, the pitchers on the ball. In your mind, I mean, Major League Baseball thinks it's a big issue. Joe Girardi has basically said it's an issue. JT Realmuto has said it's an issue. You're a guy who actually threw baseball for a living as a pitcher. You know what it's like not to have a grip on the ball or to have a grip on the ball. You know what it takes. You know how important it is. How big of a problem has this become in baseball?
Well, it's such a big problem. It's been going on for 200 years. That's how big the problem is. But this year, it's become more of a problem, I guess. If I would have known that more pine tar or some pine tar or a combination of sweat and rosin or sunscreen or whatever, if I knew that that was going to make me throw 100 miles an hour, I'd have been using it. But I threw 88 to 90. I got moisture. I can't say that I never felt pine tar on my fingertips, but I still threw 90. I didn't throw 100. I'm not sure. Well, I put this way. From the time I signed in 1971, players have been using substances to get better grips. That plain and simple. And let's see, 71, 2021. I think that's 50 years. At 50 years, I've been in or around the game, and they're still doing the same thing. What's the difference that when I used sweat and got a little tackiness on my fingertips and maybe a dab of rosin, which I didn't hardly use the rosin at all, but if I did and I get a little tacky feeling, it gave me a better grip. I still had to make my pitch. It didn't make me throw harder. I don't understand. Like, baseball wants to fix things. This regime of baseball, the commissioner now and the Players Association, they want to fix baseball by changing the rules because one aspect of the game is doing better than the other. Instead of making the other guys adjust, making the hitters adjust, hit the ball the other way. Don't talk about taking away the shift. Talk about making the hitters hit the other way. And if they don't want to, so be it. Then let them be 220 hitters. Stop changing the game. Stop changing the game to balance it out, or in your mind, balance. What if the hitters just go off next year? If the pitchers can't get anybody out, are they going to say, hey, we need to go back to pine tar and sunscreen? Serious. What are they going to do? Are they going to hollow out the bats so the balls don't go as far? I don't get it. I really don't. And baseball keeps trying to change rules to make it more equal or equitable. Let the players change. Let them dictate what's going to happen. If the players want to keep hitting 220, then they'll keep hitting 220. If they want to keep swinging up, changing their swing path and hitting pop-up after pop-up, so be it. If they don't want to hit for average and just hit home runs, that's what the game's coming to. The pine tar, how many pine tar, I guess, is the most common that you would think of players using to get a better grip. That spin rate, was it going to get, maybe gives them a better breaking ball, makes it spin better. I don't know what it does for a fastball. My spin rate on the fastball, maybe it jumps a little bit at the end, but again, it's not making you throw harder. I don't think. Maybe it is.
We are seeing like historic velocities and spin rates. And, you know, when you throw that four seamer, you want to kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, you want to get it coming off your fingertips with a little backspin, right?
Right. Yes.
Okay. So you want to throw that classic power pitcher four seamer with the backspin. When they load their fingertips up with the tack, it sounds to me like they get a little more force in that backspin when it's coming off the fingertips. And now, you know, in the old days, I guess a little bit of spit and a little bit of rosin would give you that. Maybe a little touch of pine tar would give you that. And now they've just pushed it so far. They're using this spider tack, they call it. And it just gives you even more of a thrust, I guess, coming off those fingertips. More backspin, more spin rate. The ball that what they call holds it, a fastball holds its plane more through the zone. I guess has more life, more stuff, and it's by the hitter, and the hitter can't catch up to it. I mean, do you think there is a line when you start, you know, going from pine tar, which has been around baseball for 150 years, spit, which has been around baseball forever, rosin's been around baseball forever, even that tough skin they put on the ankles when they tape the ankle, you can get a little bit of that. Do you think maybe they've crossed the line and there's just too much science, or, you know, they've developed this substance where you're just getting too much torque and spin rate and thrust coming off the fingertips?
I don't know. The pine tar hasn't gotten, pine tar is pine tar. And I don't, if you can find something stickier, I don't know. I don't know what it does. I really don't. I mean, I know it makes the ball break better, but like going back to why not work on the things like command? What about tempo? Things like that. And everything's become just science.
Power.
Yeah. How many guys, I mean, what are the chances Jamie Moyer, who pitched 22 years in the big leagues, what's the chances he get drafted today if they saw him pitch like he did in his, you know, in a World Series year?
Yeah.
Well, what's the chance of him getting drafted? Almost zero.
Yeah. He wouldn't stack up well. They're just building these pitchers for power and velocity, command and pitchability are going by the wayside.
Yeah.
I certainly hope they come back. I mean, I guess one of the goals is if they eliminate this super sticky stuff, maybe it'll come back. But you know, pitchers, like you said, I've seen pitchers walk by the pine tar rag for 30 years and grab a little bit on the side, maybe put a little on their glove, and nobody ever complained about it. As long, you know, I covered baseball in the 80s, the 90s, and the early 2000s. Nobody ever complained about it then. Nobody. It's just now. So clearly they're using some different stuff to build those velocities. And they're also engineering a pitcher that throws harder. They're going to these facilities where, you know, the whole goal is to hit 100, and you're not going to stop till you hit 100. And, oh, by the way, along the way, you're going to have Tommy John.
Yeah. I mean, the guys, from my understanding, our minor league hitting and pitching coordinators never played professionally. They came from a batting cage in Seattle. But that's where I'm going to entrust my kid or myself to these guys that never played professionally, because they have the algorithms to tell you what this is going to do and that's going to do. That's one of the problems with baseball. It's like, we're not teaching the right things anymore. We're not teaching guys how to make contact. We're not teaching guys how to hit the outside corner at the knees. We're teaching them to be just strength and power. It's like they're training professional weightlifters, you know, more power, muscle up, get stronger. Like, what about the techniques? What about the mechanics? What about the tempo? What about, you know, all that coming into to figure out your command? Is that even taught? I don't know.
No, I remember talking to a ton of Leo Mazzoni about this and about the importance of commanding the down and away strike. That's how he put three guys in the Hall of Fame. You know, they put themselves there, but you know, I mean, under his tutelage. Command down, and now you hear so little about command. I mean, Alvarado must drive you nuts. Every time he comes in the game, I'm like, this has a chance to be really ugly because there's no command. It's just power.
There's only a handful of guys to me that know how to pitch in the major leagues. Serious. It's how many guys can throw that fastball down and away? Now, DeGrom, he can paint down there. His glove side at the knees. And that's one of the things that turned him into a Cy Young winner, is he was always had good arm side, throwing side command. He could pitch away to left-handers and into right-handers. He had that down pat. But until he started dominating right-handed down and away, or down, not so much down and into left-handers, but being able to do that against right-handers down and away, that's what turned things around for him, the command of that fastball down and away. And now, granted, he's throwing, you know, 98 to 100. Nobody does any damage. But watching Nola, his last complete game and his last start, he was able to hit that fastball down and away. He was able to utilize that for the first, like, maybe the second time all year. He's just Zach Eflin. Another guy, he's figured out how to command the ball down. The success rate of guys, if you look at any pitcher that can hit that outside corner down and away, hitters rarely even sniff at it. They won't even swing at it unless there's two strikes. And with two strike approach, how much damage are you going to give up? Not much at all. But where's that thought process? Where does that the sticky stuff, the spin rate and all that has no bearing on, I want to throw the fastball down and away, to pound that into our pitchers from the time they sign and through their whole career, every pitcher in this organization, that should be our number one priority to me. And that's not even questionable. If you go back and look at video of all the games the Phillies have played in the last 10 years, tell me how many fastballs down and away a right-hander did any damage on. Very little.
You're right. The emphasis is completely on power and big tools and power at the plate as well as a hitter, because that's what gets you signed and gets you a big signing bonus. And but doesn't necessarily mean you can, you know, maneuver the ball around the field when they shift on you. It's
here's
it's
one. Here's one. We're worried about spin rate and or substances on the ball. When did baseball change the rules that you, unless I can stand on the top of the mound as long as I'm not on a rubber, and I can load up as much as I want on my fingertips? Baseball made that. They allowed that.
Yeah.
It's okay to go to your mouth now while you're on the hill. But how concerned, and that wasn't that long ago. Right. How concerned were they with about foreign substances on the ball when they allow the pitchers to go to their mouth when they're on top of the mound, as long as they're not on the rubber? That is that not a contradiction?
Yes. What do you think the game is going to be like starting Monday night? Do you anticipate seeing the umpire going out there and shaking down a pitcher or grabbing him as he walks off? What is that going to be like? Are you interested to see it?
That's the other part of it is, which umpires are going to enforce it? You know, Joe's going to.
Oh,
yeah. Joe's going to look at that. Joe West, you know who he is. Some other umpire, maybe a rookie umpire, maybe won't do it. Maybe he sees something, he's like, I'm not going to bother with it. I'm not going to, where's the enforcement going to come from? Is every umpire, is there a mandate that they have to check? So, I mean, it's so, I don't know what the word is, non-discretionary or
yeah,
and
arbitrary.
There's no uniformity to who gets checked or when. It's just this hat looks funny, or this guy keeps going to his hat. You know, see guys coming up there fixing their hat and they're squeezing the bill as hard as they can. That's probably an indication, but that's been going on forever.
Let me ask you this, because you know the clubhouse dynamic. Do you know the dynamic of a major league clubhouse? You know the dynamic of a pitching staff, which is like a team within a team. They're going to issue like 10-game suspensions if you get nailed. You're going to get a 10-game suspension.
No, you're going to get 10-game vacation.
That's right. You're going to get paid.
Yes. That's a big difference.
You go to the Outer Bank in 10 days.
Who are you hurting?
Well, you're hurting your team because they can't replace you. I was going to say, is there like pressure – to maybe, like, you're going to be, if you're using this super tax stuff, are you going to be saying, well, I can't, you know, do this to my team and we can't operate a man down for 10 days? Do you think it's going to work? Do you think these rules are going to reel it in? And I can't say bring it back where it was, because they don't even want you to use pine tar or tough skin. They don't want you to use anything now. Do you think there's going to be pressure on pitchers? Like, are they going to be scared straight? Put it that way.
I don't think so.
Okay.
When they cracked down on steroids, it didn't stop everybody from using steroids.
You're right.
Still hasn't. So, I mean, yeah, it might cut some back, but you're not going to stop everybody. And I don't, again, it's so arbitrary. Who's going to make these decisions? Who's going to check? Who's going to say we get to check these guys? I read something yesterday. I think there's going to be random checks. How are those random checks going to work? Is it be like, we haven't checked the Phillies pitcher in 2 days, so we got to check one of them? Pick a number. I don't know.
I'm kind of fascinated to see, like, you know, the first check, like, you know, it's like pulling a car over. You know, I'm kind of, you know, are they going to grab Zach Wheeler as he's walking off the mound and check his belt loops, or, you know, the brim of his cap, or Alvarado when he's walking off the mound? I'm sure he'll take that really well, you know.
Yeah, and it's going to disrupt. How about if you just you're a little sore, you're a little tired, you're a little, it's the dog days, you know, it'd be like, man, I could sure use a vacation. I think I'm going to load up on some stuff so I can get a little 10 days off. I'm still going to get paid, mind you. That's why I say it's not a suspension. It's a vacation.
So you think they need to hit him in the wallet too, if you really want to
dissuade
him. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, what's money to these guys anyway? But I mean, obviously, you throw a, you know, $5,000 fine on them or $10,000, for some guys, it'll make a big difference. For other guys, it won't make any difference. But, you know, to, or $10,000, I mean, take their money away for 10 days. There'll be some guys saying, I'm not bothering, I'm not messing with that. I can't afford it. But
and ultimately, it could take money away because, you know, the way these front offices now put a valuation on player for free agency, they use so much technology. You know, maybe guys that signed big contracts the last few years who are benefiting from the super tacky stuff, and that was reflected in their spin rate, they got huge deals. Now, if you take this stuff out of the game, spin rates go down, and that's going to affect what some of these free agent pitchers make, because the guys who are putting the valuations on the players, you know, are really digging down into these and putting a big value on spin rates. Spin rates go down, dollar signs go down, you know?
But it's subjective too. I mean, the spin rates go down, the hitters start hitting more, the pitchers don't have as good an ERA, but it's all going to be relative.
It will be better game too. Be better game.
Much better.
More offense. And I love a two-hit shutout. I mean, I love watching this Wheeler guy attack. I love watching Wheeler attack hitters. And he's had
a Wheeler DeGrom game.
Oh, what's great.
What's wrong with that?
Wheeler Woodruff that game. And then Wheeler, the young kid, Ian Anderson last week. I mean, those are, you know, people say, oh, those are boring. BS. Those are great. That's baseball, man. Those are two great pitchers. But, you know, it can't happen all the time. And it certainly can't happen, I don't think, because pitchers are pushing the envelope too much with this sticky stuff. So I think they need to find a happy medium. My only fear is they're going to end up legislating stuff out of the game that pitchers have benefited forever. But this is sort of an age-old thing, this, you know, loading the ball, doctoring the ball, doing stuff to the ball. It's been happening forever, Larry. What, in your career, what have you, some of the things that you've seen done to a baseball in the goal of getting hitters out?
Spit balls, grease balls, scuff balls, emery board balls. I guess that would still be kind of a scuff ball. Pitches.
Tell me what some of this stuff does to the baseball. What does a little bit of Vaseline do to a baseball?
You throw it, the ball comes off your fingertips real slippery. It's the opposite of the pine tar. It comes off your fingertips. It almost like squirts out. So you don't get the rotation. It comes in and just basically bottoms out at the plate. Guys that can do it were really good at it. Real good at it.
How about a little scuff? What does a little scuff do to a baseball?
If you look at a baseball and you hold it with the seams, the two sides are soft, right? The two sides don't have seams. So you scuff the side opposite of the way you want the ball to go. So if I'm throwing a pitch and I scuff it over on this side of the ball, it's going to go this way. If I scuff it on this side of the ball, it's going to go that way. More, it's going to sink down and into a right-hander. It's going to kind of rise up and into a left-hander, depending on what side the scuff is on. If it's a left-hander and I want it to rise up and come at him, I'm going to scuff it on the right side of the ball so it'll come into a left-hander. If I want it to sink to a right-hander, I'm going to scuff it on the left side. And it's you don't have to – I mean, I can do it with my thumbnail. Not that I ever have, but I could do it with my thumbnail because it's really easy. And you almost – basically, you can file your nail to almost where it's, like, serrated. And you can put a scuff on the ball and like that. And you can make it do some, you can make it dance.
I kind of don't have a problem with that. I kind of see that as gamesmanship. I mean, back in the day, you know, now they throw out every baseball. Back in the day, right, if a ball skipped on the ground, the pitcher wanted that ball. He wanted to throw that ball because he could make it dance, right?
Yes. And that's, I mean, and nowadays though, every single ball, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you hit a ground ball to short, you don't throw that pitch. You don't throw that ball again. Yeah, I don't know. Seems like every ball's thrown out, whether it's put in play or hits the dirt. It's done. It's gone.
Pitcher's been doing this stuff forever. There's a great story that somebody told me, and I'm not going to mention the names because these pitchers are, well-known pitchers, but George Steinbrenner called Lou Piniella in the dugout once and said, "Can't you see that so-and-so, the other team's pitcher, can't you see that he's cutting the ball with his belt buckle?" And Lou Piniella said to him, "Yeah, George, I can see that, but I got so-and-so on the mound and he's doing the same thing. I'm crazy, huh?"
Hey, there's a pitcher, I won't name names, but he wasn't from the United States, but he would have a big chew of tobacco in his mouth. Now, tobacco chew, when you spit on your hands and you rub a ball with it, it's like pine tar. A lot of players wrap their chew in bubble gum. Now, have you ever had your fingers touch your mouth when you've had bubble gum in it? And then you go like that with your fingers, you can't get them apart. It's like bubble gum is so sticky. Now you get bubble gum and chew together and you get the ball rubbed up. Not only does it turn brown, but it's, you know, you can hold it like Bauer was doing the other day in the palm of his hand without his fingers. I mean, it's so sticky, so tacky. Like the fact that baseball said you can go to your mouth on the mound. If you're a pitcher, why not just get a couple wads of bubble gum? Fresh, have bubblegum in your pocket, put in a new piece every other hitter. And it's just that sticky, and baseball's allowing it. They said, you can stand on the mound and go to your mouth. That's what I would do. That's the first thing I would do. If they're saying I can't use pine tar, I'm throwing bubblegum in my mouth and I'm loading up my mouth and I'm going to have all the stickiness I want. I don't know. I mean, there's so many ways to get around it.
I don't see guys go to their mouth much anymore, probably because they get all that crap on their face.
Exactly. You want to put a little pine tar in your mouth, throw some rosin in there while you're at it. Maybe the rosin will help cleaning the teeth or something, but it's not something I don't think anybody wants to do.
Well, we're going to see how this thing works over here. It's starting up on Monday. I think it's going to be really fascinating.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Before I let you go, just I want to ask you about the Phillies. Very inconsistent. Man, the three-game series at Dodger Stadium, 2-for-30 with runners in scoring position. That's just, it's hard to believe. But, you know, they're 500. We're approaching 70 games. What do you think of this club?
I think it's a 500 club.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's not like this is a small sample size. What are we, a third of the way through the season?
Yeah.
Roughly. I mean, it is what it is. I don't, Leopard's not going to change his spots. You know, it is what it is. And now you lose Segura, who to me, I don't know how many times I said, right man, right spot. We got the right guy up, get this guy up in this situation. And now he's done for a while. That's a crusher. And the injury certainly hurt this team. They haven't helped. But the streakiness of the offense is just, it's, you look at the two games against the Yankees, or, you know, the hitting with runners in scoring position there, and then look at what the series against the Dodgers, and obviously the pitching's a little different, but somebody's got, there's like, Segura to me was the only guy you could actually count on.
That's because he goes up there with a line drive approach. He's short and quick to the ball, and he's trying to hit a line drive somewhere, and occasionally he gets it and it goes into the seats, and that's kind of definition of a home run. Home run should be. I don't think you go up there hunting home runs. I mean, it's like the old Seinfeld thing with Paul O'Neill. Like, you can't just hit a home run. I mean, you know, but everybody's gotten away from it. It's a different game. I want to hit you on Hector. Do you think, I mean, I can't call him a lockdown closer. He gets on good rolls now and then, but boy, that bullpen door opens, and this is for a long time now. There's an uneasiness. Do you think that's an issue?
I would say when you have a, I don't know what it is now, but it's still probably high, a 6-8, or say probably a 6-8 ERA in the eighth inning. Boy, so that's not just one pitcher. That's a combination of pitchers. You have that kind of ERA in the seventh, eighth, or ninth, you're going to have trouble playing above 500. And the, what everybody thought with our defense, the way it was, that it was going to have some holes, but the offense would overcome it. The offense hasn't overcome much of that at all. And I think that's what the surprise is to me and a lot of other people, is that the offense just, it's not that good. That, I mean, the strikeouts they've cut down on lately, but you talk about some streaky hitters. I mean, who's not streaky in this lineup? I mean, you maybe Realmuto's not, Segura's not, but Odubel can be streaky. He's been pretty consistent this year. I mean, I think he's played very well mentally and everything. Just he's been good, but the streakiness of Harper, the streakiness of Hoskins, the streakiness of McCutchen, or at least what they've shown through this year, it's, if you're not hitting the streaks at the right time, you're in trouble. And I think that 2-for-30 kind of shows that.
No question. That's the injuries, the defense, the runners in scoring position, and just the hit or miss nature of the bullpen has really held this team back. It's a flawed team. It's an imperfect team, but they're in a division that is very much like that. So that's why they're still hanging around. And this weekend, big test with the San Francisco Giants and Gabe Kapler. I want to thank you, Larry, for joining me. It's been a lot of fun. I always learn something when I talk baseball and pitching with you. And now I'm going to go out in the backyard and I'm going to scuff up one. I'm going to see if I can make it dance with my 65-mile-an-hour fastball.
You can still do it. I got faith in your steaks.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Larry. And thank you to the listeners. Catch you next time on Phillies Talk.
You got it.